Hey everyone, welcome back to The Growth Signal, where we are rethinking how we build relationships with our customers. And I'm so excited to introduce you to my new friend, Matt. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
So longtime listeners will know we open up with one simple question. What is your hot take?
Yeah, so my hot take, I know that you and I first got connected because I think we're jamming on something customer success or post-sale related. So keeping it on that theme, my hot take would be that I'd say probably within the next 2 to 3 years, every CS team that, you know, maybe is an SMB focus is going to own a revenue quota, or they're going to be replaced by teams that do. I think this is due in large part to the fact that the winds were always blowing in this direction over the past few years anyway, but I think that the tech recession of 2023 probably hit the fast forward button on this a little bit. And, you know, the antiquated, in my opinion, thinking of customer success just being relationship management, it's kind of falling by the wayside. And in a world where retention is revenue, where the renewal is considered in many organizations to be the sale, if your customer success team can't directly tie their work to commercial outcomes like expansion, renewals, upsells, they're not going to be considered a strategic asset, and they're going to be considered a cost center. And when we run into another recession, you know, if and when it comes, cost centers are the ones that get cut, right? So I think it's going to be in large part due to necessity that essentially every CS team is going to end up owning a quota sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I've been having a parallel conversation. A lot of my work has been in more of the research side of the house, right? Where we're trying to understand our customers and trying to figure out what their motivations are, what's helping them stay, what's encouraging them to go, right? And I had a conversation with a researcher recently who she was trying to figure out, how do I contribute best to the company? And we had this conversation that you're either revenue generating, right, sales, or you're revenue responding. But every role in a company, no matter what, if you're HR or research or sales or customer success, has to figure out, how do you tell a revenue story related to their role?
Yeah, no, I completely, I mean, you're talking to someone who's been in sales all of their life. And, you know, for better or for worse, all I do is talk with revenue professionals all day long, every day of the week. I completely agree. Yeah, I mean, I think that's right on target.
It's a mind shift, though, for those who haven't been in quote unquote revenue roles. Right? Like, salespeople understand my job is to drive revenue. But when you're HR or customer success of old, right, the idea of being a revenue driver almost had like their skin crawling.
Yeah. And it still does for a lot of teams, and understandably so, because to your point, this isn't the auspices under which they were hired, right? They're like, no, I just want to support the customer. Right. So I think a big part of this mindset shift is going to be outside of things like, you know, training them on how to become more commercially minded, how to tell, to your point a moment ago, how to become a better storyteller, how to tie narratives back when you're speaking with a client. It is going to be instilling in them this mindset that, hey, sometimes the best thing for the client is to buy more products, services that we offer, which is ultimately going to help them solve the problems and the challenges that they came to us for initially.
Right. And unfortunately, the movies and the TV where you see sellers and that kind of sales relationship, that commercial mindset, is kind of giving a bad rap. Like, you think, okay, always be closing, right? Like, that's how people think of it when they think of sales and the relationship with the customer from a transactional perspective. How do you think about it? How have you changed people's minds around what that revenue motion actually looks like?
You know, I think it actually does tie back to the point that I just mentioned, you know, doing what's right for the customer, right? And whether you are in sales or post sales, I mean, hopefully, if you're in sales, you're lucky enough to work for an organization where you do truly believe, like, yes, what I'm providing is valuable, does solve a legitimate problem. And you've doused yourself in the Kool-Aid, so to speak, right? I mean, you know, because the best way to affect an initial sale is going to be, you know, by exuding some level of authenticity. I think that buyers these days, or buyers, you know, many are able to smell bullshit, right? You know, when they see it. So fortunately, again, if you're going to be a customer success professional, you're going to be fortunate enough to work for an organization where you do truly in your heart of hearts believe, like, yeah, I mean, we're doing good work for these clients, right? It's just going to be about finding a way to, for the lack of a better term, leverage this really strong, trusting relationship that you have built with these clients and finding a way to translate that into revenue. But again, doing so in a way, in a manner in which, again, you truly believe, no, this is going to help you solve some additional problems.
And almost in a way, people who are in that kind of like relationship mindset are probably better suited to help solve that problem and to close those deals, because you're in the trenches with the customer. You understand their specific use cases, the things that they're working on, the complaints or issues that they're having, or the issues that they're having with other products that is already in their ecosystem, right?
Yeah.
It's okay to sell things to our friends, to people that we like. It's not inherently a bad thing to get them to do something that's transactional.
Exactly. And again, to the larger point, as long as it's in their best interest, right? And again, you know, presume that we all do truly believe that and take that to heart. That's where you can actually sell, but sell with authenticity, right? Which is going to be the most important component of this.
So you mentioned back at the beginning of our conversation about, you know, the need for a quota someday, right? The idea that someday, especially those CS teams that are SMB, are going to have a quota. I see kind of that split, right? We have one group that is against that. That's never what they want to do. We have one group that's already moving in that direction. For those who are in the middle, they know they need to start moving in that direction. They know they need to start thinking about customer success as a revenue driver. What is the one thing you would have them do first to start down that path?
Ooh, that's a big question. You know, the first, my initial response was going to be to start planting the seeds from a training and development perspective. Again, to get some of these post-sales professionals into a place where their competencies, where they do have the competencies to be a little bit more commercially minded. But in thinking about it more, I think the first thing that they should do actually starts one or two steps earlier, which is doing an honest evaluation of the individuals that you have on your team right then. Right. We work with a lot of companies right now that have been going through or are just starting to go through this transition on their post-sales teams. And as much as I hate to say it, you know, this is the unfortunate reality. There are some situations where organizations are looking at the individuals on their team and they're saying like, hey, yeah, we got these, call it 10 people to use a round number on our post-sales team, you know, and looking at their skills, their competencies, knowing their personalities as we do, we think that these 7 are going to be able to make this shift. These 3, not so much. Right. So what does that mean from an organizational design structure? What does it mean as it relates to the future career prospects for those 3 people, at least within your organization? Right. That's when it becomes a question of like, okay, do we find a way to repurpose these individuals and their talent and what they brought to the organization in the different roles within the company? Or do we have to have the less than ideal conversation with them, which is, hey, this is the new direction that the organization is going. Here's why. We're not sure if this is going to be the best fit for you, which again, pains me to say, it's never a hot stone massage to have those types of conversations, but it doesn't change the fact that these are the conversations that are happening in many organizations right now.
I think you also made an important point just now, though, that it's a conversation, right? So if someone's truly not suited to a transactional role, right, it's okay to move them into a different role or to move them onto a different company. That is okay, because ultimately, if they're not suited for it, they're not going to be happy. You're not going to be happy, and it will be fine. But making that decision without involving them in that conversation, that's where it gets a little bit harder, a little bit, you know, like that more gut-wrenching feeling as a leader, because then you're not giving them the opportunity to develop the competency or to develop that gut instinct that comes along with building those relationships for a transactional outcome.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. And I know one company that we work with now, they made the switch, you know, that they flipped the switch, so to speak, on January 1st of this year, the beginning of their 2025 fiscal year. That's when new job titles were rolled out, compensation plans were restructured, everything went live. But to the point a moment ago, they started having these preemptive conversations with the folks on their post-sales team in January 2024, right? They explained the rationale, you know, they talked through specifically what this rollout in phases was going to look like. And exactly like you said, you know, it gave the individuals on the team the opportunity to, number one, determine whether or not this was going to be a good fit for them. And if so, they found ways to prove it throughout the year. But more importantly, it gave the organizations the opportunity to find ways to support the small number of individuals on your team that either raised their hand proactively and said like, hey, this isn't going to be my jam, right? You know, I didn't get into this type of role to be a salesperson. I'm not going to be a good fit for this. I just know that. Perfect. Now we have a good 8-9 months of leeway in order to find a way to either, again, find a new opportunity for you internally, or if something like that doesn't exist, we can be extremely supportive as we help you work through a transition into another company where maybe there is a role or a set of responsibilities that is going to be much more up your alley.
Let's stay on this competencies conversation for a minute, because one of the biggest complaints that I hear from people in CS roles is that they don't have access to the same resources, tools, learning and development opportunities as the sales guys, right? So how do we as companies who are ready to move our customer success teams into these revenue roles, what kinds of things do we need to keep in mind from that investment that we're going to make into these teams to ensure that we get the most return on this transition?
Yeah, that's a really important question. I do think it is exactly like you said, it's an investment, right? It is an investment in not only, again, step one, assessing the current talent as it lies, but more importantly, step two, investing in skills and competency training, right? You know, taking, again, these much more historically reactive professionals and turning them into much more commercially minded individuals. And what does that include? That includes training around things, as we spoke about before, storytelling, building narratives, but also things like negotiation, right? You know, how do you get better at multi-threading within an organization? How do you get better at articulating value, right? How do you get better at not only demonstrating the ROI of your product, but just as, if not more importantly, the cost of inaction, the COI of not moving forward with additional products or services, right? And these aren't things that you could just upskill over the course of 2-3 weeks or so via one, you know, on-demand enablement webinar, but these are some pretty significant investments, ongoing investments that you're going to have to make. You're again, essentially going to have to take these individuals who maybe have never, in air quotes, sold a day in their life and put them in a position where their competencies are on par with individuals who have been selling for 5, 10, 15 years, right? Mm-hmm. Especially if your current customers are going to be your biggest revenue driver, which in many organizations they are, why would you ever want to underinvest in them compared to the folks that are bringing in the new logos?
Yeah, absolutely. And we are seeing a shift in companies. I guess I won't speak for you. I am seeing a shift in companies in which, you know, when I first started my career, we did a lot of pipeline research, I'll call it, where we research what does it take to go from I'm interested in buying this product to the next step, which is, hey, I'm ready to actually talk to somebody. And how do we shortcut that as fast as possible? And companies were investing a ton of money into that buyer decision process, right? How do we make those decisions? How do we smooth that process? And then really honestly didn't care about what happened after the contract got signed. That shift has been happening from my perspective. Are you seeing the same thing in the companies that you work with?
Yes, all across the board. And, you know, I believe I mentioned it earlier on in the conversation, but we do have a lot of companies. We see a lot of companies that have taken the mindset of the renewal is the sale, right? You know, the initial contract signature, bringing a new logo in the door, that is just a preamble up into the real sale which is that renewal at, call it, the 1 year mark. Because again, you know, that not only, especially if you're an earlier stage company, that not only is going to sort of help you validate, you know, product market fit and your stickiness, the stickiness of your solution, but more importantly, you know, that is going to just open up all the different upsell, expansion, revenue opportunities, which is where over the long term, the real money, so to speak, is going to be made.
Yeah. And my hypothesis too, is that the consumer buying behavior has really changed, right? Like I feel since a lot of our stuff is in the cloud now, it's pretty easy to change, right? Like if I want to change my project management app from Asana to Monday, it's a couple clicks of a button and waiting on a subscription, right? And so because our customers are less loyal than ever, we have to think about renewal as a sale. I love you pointing that out. You're actually one of the first people to really talk about that from a retention perspective, that the real sale happens at renewal rather than at first close.
Yeah, no, thank you for saying that. But just piggybacking on your point, I completely agree. Not only is it easier to change, but the options of what platform to change to.
Yeah.
And that just keeps speeding up. I mean, again, you take an organization, a huge market leader like Gong, for example, you know, you rewind 2 years, it's like, no, I mean, every organization has to have Gong, right? Gong or maybe, you know, a similar type of platform. You fast forward to today, with just the complete flooding of the market of platforms or point solutions that, to be clear, are not going to do everything that Gong does, but maybe could do 80% of it at 20% of the cost.
Yeah, exactly.
That is a really compelling solution to any organization. Well, you know, I should say every organization right now that is looking at, like, okay, how can we reduce spend while at the same time not really having a dramatic impact on our productivity?
And the difference of expectation of the consumers of your solution working with all of my other solutions, like the ecosystem integration. I had this conversation with someone a few days ago that my iRobot vacuum talks to my Alexa and talks to my Android phone, and all of these things connect to each other. And it's just the expectation that it just works together, even if it's not a all-in-one solution, but rather a best-of-breed approach.
Yeah, Matt, that's a really interesting point that I haven't thought of until you brought it up. What does that mean for the future of platforms, right? You know, 2-3 years ago, we're going to be the platform for this, the platform for that.
We're the operating system. That's the one that I heard all the time. We're the OS for your revenue, right?
Exactly. And I would bet, I don't know this for sure, but I would put money on most organizations being okay with a janky scotch tape together tech stack that, again, you know, 80% of what you get through a platform at 20% of the cost versus, no, we're just going to buy this extremely expensive platform and we're not going to use, you know, a whole lot of the features, but the good news is it has everything else that we need. I'd bet that many organizations, especially these days, and I don't see this changing anytime soon, but not much more for the former. Janky, the old Navy approach, right? We don't need Gap, a little bit less, but similar-ish quality. Right.
Well, and the mindset of like, okay, well, it's janky now, but it's only going to get better, right? And then when something doesn't work, we swap out this component, right? Building your own PC rather than buying something that comes out of the box.
Yeah, exactly. That's a perfect analogy.
So when you're looking at how people are creating these, for lack of a better way to say it, like revenue teams of the future, where it's more lifecycle approach from the first hello to the next renewal, what do you think leaders are missing right now?
It's another really interesting question. I'm not sure this would be something that they're missing, something that they're confused about or that they don't have a clear handle on is how and where all things AI can and should factor in this. And it's not for lack of trying, but going back to some that we spoke about a moment ago, it's due to the reason that a leader will invest in an AI solution today, and then 2 months from now, there's something that is, oh my God, so much better. and so much cheaper, right? So what we see happening across the board is, a year ago, a lot of leaders were investing in AI solutions for this, that, and the other thing. Now, a lot of them are saying like, okay, number one, too much analysis paralysis. And number two, we know that if we wait 2 months, there's going to be something new, better, cheaper that hit the market. And then 2 months turns into 4 months, which turns into 6 months. So it's interesting. I mean, you're seeing on the one hand, lots of fits and starts across the ecosystem as far as leveraging AI, but you are seeing some other organizations saying like, you know, crap, we're just not going to make any big decisions right now because of the rate at which everything is changing, and we presume will continue to change.
So I always love to talk about kind of what gets people up and going in the morning, right? So when you log into your computer or join a meeting on a Monday morning, what is the thing that you are working on that has you so excited right now?
This might sound like a self-serving cop-out answer. I'm one of the fortunate people that loves what I sell, right? You know, which is, and not to turn this into a commercial, but is, you know, that type of skill development for go-to-market teams. So what gets me out of bed in the morning, honestly, is having external conversations with clients and prospects, right? I mean, that is my B12 every morning.
That's awesome. I love that you described it as a B12, like that thing that gets you going, gets you moving, gives you energy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the NAD infusions, you know, whatever people do these days.
I just heard about that actually recently. I was like, they were talking to Megan Trainor, and they're like, what's your fountain of youth? And I'm like, I got to look into this. She looks great.
Yeah.
Check out the NAD infusion.
Yeah.
Awesome. So thinking about all of the incredible people that you have had a chance to meet, that you know, or that you aspire to know, who is leading the charge? Who is helping us rethink our customer relationships?
Yeah, I think my Yoda on this is a woman named Sam McKenna. I'm not sure if you're familiar with, I presume that many of your listeners are. She runs her own firm called Sam Sales Consulting. She's just fantastic at, anything, not only managing existing client relationships, which is important, but from a new business development perspective, how do you break through the noise? How do you build authentic relationships with buyers and clients, or relationships with prospects? How do you get to a point where the prospect may still want to talk to you, even if they don't buy anything from you, right? You know, how do you build those types of really true authentic relationships? And she is standing on the mountaintop preaching that song all day long. And I think that she does a fantastic job at it, which is why her and her organization are doing so well in the space, right?
I love that you specifically call out the idea of, like, even if they don't buy from you, they still want to talk to you. Because I have a few prospects that I've worked with before that, look, we weren't the right fit. It wasn't the right time, but genuinely good people. And we've stayed in touch, right? But not something that's systematic. It just so happens that we vibed as people. And I love the idea that there's a way out there to turn that into less of a happenstance or a random chance that I made a connection with someone, and more into some kind of repeatable process or competency.
Yeah, and I would agree. And I like to think that I've been able to build those types of relationships with a handful of people that have not bought from me, probably never will buy from me, but we still text each other occasionally, like, hey, how's your family? Have it, you know, that kind of stuff, but which is great. But I think that, like many other things in sales, time is back to what we were talking about earlier in the conversation. It's not something that can be faked, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it does have to stem from some type of authenticity. Like, no, listen, like, I authentically do want to keep in touch with you regardless of whether we do business.
Yeah, I was going to say the exact same thing as you were talking. I was like, we got to touch back on authenticity.
Yeah.
Because if you try to build that relationship with me and it feels forced or uncomfortable, like if you're texting me about my dog and we've only ever had one Zoom call and it wasn't that great, like if you're just trying to artificially create that friendship, that's definitely going to come across, right? You said it earlier, people can smell bullshit, right? So if you're just trying to be my friend because you want something someday, maybe, then that's definitely going to come through.
Yeah. But if, you know, we got off, you know, let's say we got off a, a demo call, and sure, you know, that went fine. But, you know, you mentioned like, hey, you know, my, I'm sorry for any noise. You know, my dog is sick. You know, if I send you an email 2 weeks later, it's like, hey, by the way, just like, how's your dog?
Yeah.
Right. You know, everyone feeling better. And like, that's it. And no follow-up. And no, hey, by the way, you know, what'd you think of the proposal that I sent over? Right. You know, I think that would hopefully hit a little bit different.
Be human, give a damn, and all will go well, right?
Simple as that, yeah.
So, Matt, if someone is really connecting with you, if they want to learn more, they want to learn more about Sales Assembly, where can they find you online?
Yeah, thanks for asking. They could always go to our website, salesassembly.com, or, you know, I like to think that I spend probably way too much time on LinkedIn. People are more than welcome to find me there and connect with me there. Would love to start a conversation with anyone who is... who's at all interested in giving me the time of day.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Matt, so much for joining me on the Growth Signal.
No, thank you for having me. This was great.